Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Back to more Boston sports talk. Gresh and Keith on EEI.
Brad Stevens, I think he's going to be better built to be in a front office position. And that job, understanding the pieces, is Kimba to answer. I'm not sure. He's played through injury a lot this year, condensed season. You know, I think there's a lot of moving pieces. What do you do with Marcus Smart? You have to make changes. But I think that opportunity to coach Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, I feel like that's does it come with pressure? Yes, it does.
Sure.
But I think that's a sexy job, man.
Yeah.
That's a great opportunity to coach a guy that I think in the next 5 years, I mean, top five player in the league.
Well, everybody heaping the praise on Jason Tatum. They're projecting him to be a superstar. That's ESPN's Jay Williams, who said that on ESPN Radio. We're into Hour 2, Gresh and Keefe on the WEEI Sports Radio Network, WEEI.com. Be an Applete. Download the Odyssey app. Take it wherever you go. 11:04 is the time. And, a bunch of head coaches got blown out yesterday. And I know that someone on the text yesterday got on us for pointing out that it was mainly middle-aged white guys, some who did have NBA experience, and Scott Brooks, and some who didn't. But
that's what it was.
But doesn't it feel like the trend is now shifting towards a certain profile of a head coach in the NBA? And it isn't necessarily tied into color, but it's tied into connecting with the modern athlete and being able to have enough basketball credibility right in their playing career to get those guys to listen.
Yeah, it just seems like this wave of players in the league really respect the former player. That wasn't always the case, but right now I think they really do value that. And it's not necessarily a black-white thing, but when the vast majority of the players in the league are black,
yep,
when they retire and you're looking to like who the coaching candidates, the vast majority are going to be black. Steve Nash seems like a good hire. Steve Kerr seems like a good hire. Those are recent, you know, white players that happen to be still coaching their teams, and I don't think they're going anywhere. But you can't just think it's a coincidence that out of the six head coaching vacancies right now, all six were coached by white dudes.
Mm-hmm.
They're all out, and now let's see who gets hired. And my guess is out of those six, do any of them grab another job? I don't think there's going to be a shuffle there with the six.
And Stevens was, probably the youngest of those guys.
Stevens probably had the best chance to coach somewhere else, but I don't know if he saw the writing on the wall or if he just likes this opportunity more.
And
or
if he wanted a college
contract
job, he can go get it. Right. But to your point, I don't think Pac-12 school isn't hiring Terry Stotts or Stan Van Gundy.
Probably not.
Whereas if Brad Stevens wanted back in, they'd be like, oh, yeah, we'll take you in a heartbeat.
But even in the NBA, like, you'll often see, like, you know, Dwayne Casey gets blown out by the Raptors. He pops on with the Pistons or like guys like that. Whereas Van Gundy, the guy Bjorkgren from Indiana, was only there for 1 year. Stotts, Clifford, like these guys, I don't think, even Scott Brooks, who had some success in Oklahoma City, I don't think any of them take one of those opening jobs. I think there's enough guys that we've heard of. And even somebody like Mike D'Antoni, who I wouldn't want for the Celtics, he probably has a little bit better resume than some of the guys that are there. So if you are going to go retread, you go with somebody like that and you say, all right, well, maybe he can break through. Look what he did for, you know, Steve Nash, the player, and Amari Stoudemire and those guys, and you try to shoot for that. But this is where Chauncey Billups and Sam Cassell, Jason Kidd maybe getting back in, the first female head coach. Like, these are what the trend seems like it's going to be now.
Well, and I know someone just sent in the text, why do we care? Why do we care what race anyone is? Choose the best candidate. Because you're beholden to the player. I mean, let's be real.
Yeah, but you're in this case,
and if Jason Tatum walked in and said to Brad Stevens, "Hey, man, can we get Coach K?"
Yeah.
They'd call Mike Krzyzewski, okay? And that is a white guy
who has a
different history than some of the other coaching candidates.
Saying, yeah.
But that's the thing. We're not talking about this in a race-baiting way. This is the reality of what the NBA general managers are dealing with right now. And really, the question starts with, if you go to your superstars, what do you want in a coach? And if you're the guy who is the owner or the GM in this instance, like Brad Stevens, and you're trying to figure out what do these guys want and connect to, for some of those players, race is going to be a factor for some of them. Therefore, it has to be a part of the discussion, but not the whole discussion.
No, and I just think a lot of it is you're trying to find the best coach for really 2-3 players on your team, sometimes one. Like, that's the most important thing. If you can break through. And so the two big job openings to me, I think, would have to be, I guess there's three. I would say Boston, and it's all about Tatum and Brown. Portland, it's all about Damian Lillard, and if you can keep him. And then New Orleans, it's all about Zion Williamson, and then a step below that, Brandon Ingram. And if all those guys immediately respect the former player, that just gives you such an advantage rather than having to deal with. And these guys don't get like a long time to break through necessarily. The guy in Indiana was there for a year.
Right.
And so they're not there for a super long time. How long was Van Gundy in?
A year.
A year. So this is what we're talking about. Like, these guys don't get a long time. So if you have to build that respect during a year in which you win 30 games, all right, you're gone. Whereas if they come in on the ground floor and they already have, you know, they're going to listen to, pay attention to, learn from all of that, then that's your best chance to succeed.
That's really the discussion that we're about to get into with you at 617-779-7937. Not only can we rank the candidates and things like that, but it's sort of the philosophy that teams are going to have to take and the approach they're going to have to take to finding their next head coach. But, hey, would you like
another typical cash giveaway? Here's this hour's code word on WEEI.
This hour's code word is Paige. P-A-G-E, text PAGE to 72881 now for your chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. Message and data rates apply. Please do not text and drive. Again, that's text PAGE, P-A-G-E, to 72881 for your chance at $1,000 right now. We will have another chance for you an hour from now. A texter says the same reason Alex Cora was originally hired. So there's a little, there's a good practical example
with the players
of the philosophy.
Yeah.
Because he said ex-player can relate to the, he writes, can relate to the foreign players, but it's the Latino players. And
them,
it really,
really
is true.
Still,
that's the thing. It's all of them. But is this, man, like, I cringe every time I start to think about the players are the ones that have control. If it's a LeBron or a KD, that's one thing. When we're getting to the B-level players who are like, yeah, this is the guy I want as a coach, that's where we kind of jump the shark on this
but
situation.
Tatum's kind of on, and I'm not, Tatum hasn't publicly said,
no,
I have to have this guy. Now, he made a comment about Evan Turner, but it wasn't like, it better be him. Hasn't been out as outspoken as Damian Lillard. But again, you're right, not all players can have a say in this. If Jason Tatum hypothetically was never on this team and you were left with Kemba and Smart and maybe even Jaylen Brown, it doesn't matter as much. But the thing is, this could be the breaking point for him to say, I want to leave. And I know that's frustrating. And you're like, well, the general manager and the team president, they're doing the best they can. They think this is the best guy. But if you do something to push out a player, then he's gone. And that is such a reality in that league. And that was some of the discussion we had yesterday with Tatum in the Olympics and how all these super teams seem to form at the Olympics. And so you have just as good of a chance of Tatum recruiting somebody here as you do somebody else recruiting him to leave Boston. And if they really like their time, part of it is, all right, what's the supporting cast look like? Because the contracts are the contracts. All these guys are getting the max money.
Predetermined.
So that's fine.
Very
you can't
much,
screw that up. But if it's, you know, you're dead set on a couple of guys and they hire somebody else. I mean, look at Deshaun Watson down in Houston. They told him he was going to be involved in both the coach and the GM hire. Turns out he wasn't. Didn't even interview Eric Bieniemy originally. he has a huge contract. So his issue is more of, all right, am I a part of this or am I not? Why would you tell me that I am? And most superstars now in the NBA think that they are a part of the process.
And you mentioned the Deshaun Watson example, and that's a good one because Dopey McNair, the owner, you know, the boob son of the guy who really built that organization,
yeah,
is the one who helped screw that up. And that's why you got to have clear communication from the people at the top. Like, that's why guys who are the buck stops here. That's why guys like Danny Ainge work. And I'm not necessarily talking about like Danny, but in a role like Danny Ainge, Pat Riley, same thing in Miami. Boom, buck stops here.
Right.
You don't even get to the owner because he's the gatekeeper, and that's where the decisions go on down. And it's funny because there are a lot of, I think the lazy NBA fan will just be like, well, the superstars coach the team anyway, and da-da-da. No, there's much more that goes into being a head coach in the NBA than just sitting on the bench and rolling out the balls. Like, you mentioned Steve Nash, right?
Yes.
And I know he's got great players around him, but there's been...
He's doing something right.
But there have been a lot of coaches, yeah, who've walked in with great talent and screwed it up more than they've gotten it right,
And I'm starting to think Mike Budenholzer's that way. I'm starting to think Doc Rivers. People don't like to hear it. Doc Rivers is that way.
Hey, the greatest coaching achievement is I got the 08 Celtics, yeah, to the championship.
You did. Garnett. You know, Garnett had a big thing to do to
of
that.
Of course. But Doc has been living on one championship. I mean.
But I also think it
like
is.
He's like the Mike Ruzzioni of, like, Mike Ruzzioni still doing speaking engagements 40 years later. Sorry.
I think that the it's clearly a player's league. And out of the four sports, it's probably third most important. Like, football's way up here. I think baseball's down at the bottom.
You mean in terms of the manager and the coach?
The most important.
Oh,
football's,
yeah,
at the top by far.
Yeah, yep, yep.
I think baseball, just because it is so stat-based, mm-hmm, and kind of like, here's what we're going to do. And then I guess you can make an argument between hockey and basketball. But we've just seen so many examples of really good teams having one coach, and then the other coach comes in and just pushes them over the top. Not that he's going to take, you know, an 8 seed to winning the title, but they're going to be just that difference maker. Again, Thibodeau has changed that team in New York. You know, Steve Kerr taking over for Mark Jackson is a huge one. Mark Jackson was good, or at least the team was good. You're
right.
Like, all right, maybe they'll get there. But they said, you know what? We're going to make a change. We're going to go with Steve Kerr. And that pushed those guys over the top. And I think the coaching hire matters even more, in my opinion, when your core is in their mid-20s. Who's coaching LeBron right now? The fact that Frank Vogel coached LeBron and Anthony Davis last year, probably not that big of a deal. But the next guy for Jalen and Jason, or Zion and Brandon, or pick a couple other young, like, that coach, I think, does matter more.
Very much so. And that gets into sort of the jobs and the, you know, the how attractive is the Celtics job. And you heard Jay Williams coming out of the top of the hour,
yep,
where he's talking about, hey, this is one of the picks to click. What's interesting is that you've got, like, Indiana, they need to rebuild, or they need to read that.
Like
they kind of got to tear
bonus,
it down.
But yeah, it's not great,
right? So Orlando, same thing.
Orlando's the worst. Got to be the worst.
So
job.
we can set those two to the side. Obviously, there's New Orleans, young talent.
I like the roster,
but don't you have to really be sold that Zion is going to become what people think Zion is going to become?
Yeah. Yeah, you got to do that. And he had a great year. I mean, he got, even for a team that missed the playoffs, he had a bunch of all NBA votes. Like, he was tremendous this year. The one thing I like about New Orleans, well, I guess it depends on what your mindset is as a coach, but New Orleans, the expectations are going to be lower. If they make the playoffs, like,
we're
in the playoffs. Whereas, you know, the other jobs that you get to, I think the expectations are a lot higher.
Well, for some of these guys, it's the whole tying yourself to the superstar, and that's where Tatum comes into play. But I wonder with Zion, and now that I see more with Milwaukee, and you and I were talking about that yesterday, like, I wonder if Zion almost becomes a Giannis-type player where he's going to put up good numbers, but will he be able to have another gear, add to his game, and be able to give you something different in the postseason? That's just my question.
Yeah, that's true. But he's also 20.
But then that's the thing.
So, like, that's a great, I think that's a great spot to sort of develop. And if you get better every year there, even if you're not winning playoff series, you're, for at least for a couple years, you're doing the right job.
And does a head coach look at that job and say, yeah, I can be here for a decade with this guy?
Maybe.
Or am I going to be the guy that gets Zion and that crew ready for the guy who comes in and Phil Jackson's me and takes over at the right time? There, so you got to have a level of confidence there. Then there is Washington. Where,
I don't know. And I mean, I know they have Beal and Westbrook, but
that's the thing.
Not a
like
good job.
You know that someone is going to convince themselves, I can do this with these two guys, right?
And, but what I think is going to happen is, especially if Beal plays in the Olympics, that could be the start to get me out of here.
It might
I've been
be.
Here my whole career. We haven't won crap. I want out, and I could see him demanding a trade. And then you're like, all right, I'm here because of this player, but now he's gone, and now I'm just rebuilding with picks, and by the time we're good, I'll be gone.
And then there's Portland, who has an admittedly great player, but who's also on the wrong side of the age wheel, so to
Oldest
speak.
Oldest star out of all the teams that have an opening. They have, like, I like their starting lineup. I think they have a good lineup. But, again, in the Western Conference, you're just kind of smashing your head against the wall.
Here's the other thing, too. If that guy leaves, if Damian Lillard leaves Portland, what are they?
I guess it depends on what you get, right? Are you trying to, are you just getting picks in return and maybe like a player? Because then at that point, you are looking 4 years down the road. At that point, you might as well trade McCollum. You might as well trade Powell. Like, you might as well just blow the whole thing up.
And if you're a, and if you're a head coach worth your salt, how do you sit down with the people in Portland and say, all right, where are we going to be in 3 years? Do they have any idea? Like, that, the fact that Lillard is an older star, I wonder if that turns some people off from that situation, because there isn't, you know, some young 19-year-old Euro that they discovered who they think, okay, this guy can grow into something. And then there's the Celtics. And the first thing you have is a guy that most people who analyze the league say, Jason Tatum is going to be a top five player someday in the NBA. And maybe that's the guy that you think, all right, this is who I'll hitch my wagon to. So there's, you know, there's the whole organizational fit. But I wonder if for some of these folks, because I'm sure Becky Hammon's going to get more interviews, and we heard about Teresa Witherspoon, and we heard all the players, and Cassell, and Billups, and people like that. If they run the gauntlet, right? Let's say all of them all interview for those same four jobs that we just talked about. Yeah, there's the organizational fit, but ultimately, aren't they going to look at the talent and just say, okay, this is the best talent just on superstars?
I think it's the best job. I mean, it sounds kind of like a homer, and I know they have their flaws, but I think it's the best job because you have the, you got to be worried about Lillard wanting to leave. You got to be worried about Beal wanting to leave. And then New Orleans just seems like they're even further away from you. Like, we like those two star guys. Would they win 30 games this year?
Right.
Like, they're not there yet. And there's always in the back of people's mind, how long can Zion with that body play in the NBA?
Absolutely.
I think he'll be great. Like, he'll be better than Larry Johnson ever was, but it might be less than 10 years, but that's a reality.
He could be. He could wake up and be Hot Plate Williams someday. Like, seriously.
He could be.
Him and Shime would be slamming it down at some lobster shack.
Possible. But I think Tatum and Brown, the allure of Tatum and Brown, plus this is just a, it's a playoff team. Like, you're taking over for a perennial playoff team.
Well,
now,
that's the other thing, too.
So now the goal isn't just get in there. Like, the expectations are, how do you take these guys to the next level? And can you be the coach for Tatum to be an MVP? Like, that might be the story. You know, you're like, Brad Stevens had Tatum and Brown as all-stars, but then this next coach has them as all NBA players and Tatum in the MVP race. Like, that could be what you're looking at. And then if the supporting cast around him is good enough, maybe that's when they break through. So I think it's a very enticing job.
And at 12:30, we're going to get into some of the decisions that Brad Stevens has to make, and we're going to hone in on two very important sides of the coin for Brad Stevens. We'll get into that coming up at 12:30. Hey, make sure you take us wherever you go, weei.com, the Odyssey app. Be an Apple-y. Download the Odyssey app. Take us wherever you go. You can play us on your smart speakers. All you got to do is ask for your smart speaker to play WEEI. Do we have a rank? Do we have a big board on coaches yet? Or are we still not there? Like, they're the people who we think we know about.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's like, oh, Chauncey Billups. That sounds great. Sign him up. Boom, boom, boom. But is that really the guy? You know, do we have any feel for what any of these people would have the ability to do coming here? Because I admit, like, I like Sam Cassell. Looks like E.T. A lot of people made fun of him.
Yeah.
Great player.
Yep.
He's apparently put in
very
his time.
Very successful movie, though.
E.T.
Very.
Was. Of course.
Made a ton of money.
I mean, it might be top five all time movie when it's all said and done.
It's in the mix.
Right? And then there's, you know, Billups, and we hear about Becky Hammon, and we hear about all these different people, Ime Udoka, and I'm sure there will be Candidate X, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be the name we haven't heard of yet.
And for sure. And maybe it's Darvin Ham, although we've mentioned him a couple of times. But to me, it's just more of a type. I think it's somebody who's under 50, maybe even under 45.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
A type.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
And that's why, like, again, we sort of joked about all six coaches that lost their jobs. That ain't the type.
What would be the type?
I think somebody
blonde,
who play in the
buxom
league. 6'6", 205 pounds.
No, can knock down threes.
Yeah, exactly.
And can give you 10 minutes a game.
As a killer crossover. Tim Hardaway.
Can Billups jump in when Kemba gets hurt?
Mr. Big Shot, he might be better than Kemba right now. No, that's not fair. So I would say it's got to be somebody that has probably played in the league, or I would even be open to the female candidates who had played in their league not that long ago. So somebody
highly respected female candidates who hand a stamp.
And probably
like Becky Hammon.
Probably under 45. And I also like the idea of somebody who has not been a head coach. Who has not even been a head coach. There's been a few examples of that where they just sort of pop in and it ends up working out.
Like, but do you need a sidecar assistant for someone like that?
Then I think the next level down is you get a legitimate veteran assistant coach, almost like, you know, Sean McVay, Wade Phillips, if you want to go NFL.
Does Jay Larinaga count as that, considering he's already here and does know the inner workings of not only the organization but also that roster?
No, to me it would be, because you still have Brad, so Brad knows the roster very well.
Mm-hmm.
He's still a part of the front office, so I would want somebody who has NBA coaching experience as the top assistant, and then so he could sort of bounce back with, you know, whatever kind of feedback for the new guy. Like, you take a look at Steve Nash's staff, or when Steve Kerr was in Golden State originally, like his staff, like something like that is what I would want.
Yeah, I don't think it's as simple as what do the superstars think, but they have to be included in this. And that is one thing that I think Brad Stevens will get right. Now, those guys might not be thrilled at the end of the day, but don't you kind of trust that Brad will make sure he's communicating with them on a level that makes each of Tatum and Brown comfortable?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, he knows these guys better than he's coached literally every game they have both played in the NBA.
Is it necessary for him to go to them and just say, what do you think?
I think he should have that conversation. Yeah.
Or do you think he already knows?
Well, he might know, but I think having the conversation again with these guys, and it can be very general.
Right.
It's not like, what do you think of Sam Cassell? Like, you don't go there, but just sort of like, what are you looking for in the next coach type of thing? And as we're trying to, you know, gather all this information, and we're going to come up with the best person that we see fit. But, you know, to include those guys and make them feel like they're a part of it, it's probably
smart.
Important.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right. Shime is down a little bit. However, for those who want to hear Shime start to feel better, at noon, we're going to get to it because I think, at least on this side of the partition, and by the way, somebody called you guys Bunsen and Beaker in there, which is mad funny to me.
I can see that a little bit.
That's pretty
funny.
I'll
take that out of T3. Thank you, Gresh.
Oh, did I ruin it for you? Oh, I'm sorry. It's just too funny.
You're not allowed to bring up anything throughout the entire show for Shime segment.
I got you. Well, because Shime doesn't want to put himself over.
Well, yeah, I was trying not to.
Shime keeps it all to himself so that none of us know that either. And then he gives us crap for it on the air.
Well, Shime's going to be able to explode at noon because we think on our side we figured out what is the Shime issue.
Yes. And I know exactly what it is.
It's not a John issue, that's for sure.
No, well, it's something that you might think would be in that vein, right? A pretty crappy job by someone.
Yes, this is a very crappy job by a group of people.
There we go. I like that. All right, well, hopefully Shime can smile for the next 2 minutes to trend.
Back to Anything is Possible.
Anything is possible!
Gresh and Keith on EEI.
I just can't. It's hard. I mean, it's so hard to grip the ball. I just, you know, I mean, for Pete's sake, it's part of the reason why almost every player on the field has something, regardless if they're a pitcher or not, to help them control the ball. We are aligned in a lot of areas with the commissioner's office on this, and please just talk to us. Please just work with us. I know you have the hammer here. I would just hate to see players get hurt.
If you
would like to help a needy pitcher today finding another way to make sticky balls. Please let us know here on the Gresh and Keefe Show. Text to 37937. Clearly, pitchers in baseball need your help, fans. And right now, they have to figure out a different way to be able to doctor the baseball.
Anytime you drop a "for Pete's sake," I'll be on your side.
Yeah. For Pete's sake, it's...
For Pete's sake.
Seems like a good fella.
Like, you think he's doing a bit. You think he's doing a character. Like, no, that's just Garrett Cole crying about the baseballs. He was the one that didn't know how to answer it the other day. Like, he was blown away by the question the other day, even though it had been the number one topic in Major League Baseball. And now he's just saying, for Pete's sake.
For Pete's sake.
Come on. We were cheating this whole time. Why won't you just let us cheat? Come on. What was wrong with that? And like, just knock it off. Like, we can't. But these guys are really thrown off. Like, they are. Every one of these pitchers is just a shell of themselves. It's like they've never, ever thrown a baseball without all kinds of Gorilla Glue on it. Like, that's crazy to me.
It is, and I know there was the response to the hitters in the game, and I know that there are those who think that because batters have the ability to wear the padding on the elbow, that that's an advantage that pitchers have. And well, now we're getting now what Major League Baseball's done is created hitter versus pitcher in a way that no one wants to really be into or talk about.
No.
And I really wonder how many people really care that this little bit of this dance back and forth between batter and pitcher in terms of who's doing what and who isn't, is it really resonating with people, or are now those who were the casual baseball fans who are like, thanks, you've given me a reason, and I'll completely tune you out.
Yeah, I think that's more what it is. I think it's more of like, oh, baseball's got, what's their problem now? Hilarious. I'm just going to, like, you know, roll your eyes and be like, all right, what else is on? Because it's just so maddening. I mean, Garrett Cole signed, what, like a $200 million deal?
Well, that's the thing. Like, here's how Garrett, for those of you who are fans of Chappelle's Show, there's the skit where they did with reparations and Donyell Rawlings is in the truck and, I'm rich, biatch, right?
Yeah.
That's what Garrett Cole should have done. He just said, sir,
doesn't matter.
You know my answer is?
5 ERA.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. I have $324 million that's in the bank, bitch, later, and then walked out.
But it still doesn't make a ton of sense to me, because it's not like doctoring the baseball in the way that they were doing it was allowed, and now all of a sudden it's not allowed. It's being enforced. Now, you could say, well, you know, where'd this 10-game suspension come from?
Well,
I'm with you on that if you want to complain about that. But that's not even the main thing. They're like, all right, we're going to really look at it. It's like, well, why? You weren't looking at it before. You're like, I know, but it was in the rule book.
So if you fail a roid test, there's level 1, level 2, level 3.
Right.
This is no levels. We're just going from you were able to get away with it to now you're going to miss 2 starts if you're a starter, or 10 games if you're a reliever, which is way more impactful.
But level 3 of the steroid is banned from baseball.
But I think the point for the pitchers would be, okay, how about like a warning, then a suspension, then another tiered suspension?
So
isn't the bitching really about you're not giving us time to figure out another way to do what we do?
Another way to cheat?
Or at least, you know, like, it doesn't seem like, again, Big Rosin is going to be pissed off.
All over Rosin. Rosin's apparently useless, according to Garrett Richards.
But that's the thing, is Major League Baseball, like, maybe reposition it. Bloop. Have they presented an alternative to the pitchers? Because that's what it seems like a lot of the complaining is that there's nothing else that baseball would say you could at least use this.
Except I think that's what Rosin's supposed to be. And then you hear Garrett Richards so out, like, I've been on some mounds that don't have it, but it sucks anyway, and I can't use it, and it doesn't do anything, and nobody uses it, nobody likes it. And you're like, all right, so they need to come up with something, but you know, you dig through the rule book and sort of what's allowed and what isn't, and maybe they need to tweak that. They should have done it in the offseason. I'm not saying Major League Baseball is in the right or they're doing things
they're doing
it in a classic baseball way, but the pitchers just come across as giant babies, and it's like they've never thrown a ball before. You got Glasnow saying it led to injury. You got Garrett Richards saying, hey, get prepared for more of these 10-8 games. You got Garrett Cole saying that they should have come and talked to them. All right, so Garrett, they go and talk to you, and they say, hey, guys, knock it off. What do you do then? Because don't you think all the discussion publicly kind of was the warning signs? Kind of was the, hey, guys, cool it off, because there's a lot of attention on it now.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, these guys should get mad at all the...
Should get mad at Trevor Bauer.
No, they should get mad at the nerds, because pre-spin rate, how would we have known?
Well, that's
true. It's all spin rate.
Without
Nerd Numbers Network, you've caused this problem now.
I don't remember when spin rate first got introduced, but outside of Michael Pineda having it on his neck or Clay Buchholz having it slathered all over his arms, like you wouldn't have really known. Now, so many people just point to spin rate and they're like, all right, this is what it was. Like the Red Sox spin rate as a team, remember we were looking at that article, went up. Like they had like the third highest percentage change from last year's spin rate to this year's spin rate. So if we didn't know what the spin rate was, then it would be a lot easier for these guys to get away with it.
Yeah, it's typical baseball where the intention is good. The execution is not good right
now. So they need to find, and again, they messed around with the baseballs before. So they tried to take steroids away from everybody, but really mainly the hitters was what the focus was. But they took away from everybody. And now the sign-stealing thing they're trying to get rid of. But then they tightened up the baseballs, and so people are still hitting home runs. So I think they've kind of reduced that a little bit so the balls aren't as, you know, crazy, like super balls anymore. But now you got to find something for the pitchers where they feel comfortable with the grip, but it doesn't turn them into Cy Young. Like they need to have something where, all right, you have a better grip, but you're not all of a sudden a vastly better pitcher.
And don't you think that some of this also stems from messing with the baseball to begin with,
yeah,
to where
yeah.
it feels different to
yes.
those guys.
Yep, I do.
And it was done for hitters. So there's a little bit of the retroactive aggravation, I think, for pitchers.
I don't blame
that might
pitchers.
Be coming out inside. However, they're just focused on the you're not letting us use the sticky stuff versus, hey, these are all the things that have been done to pitchers mm-hmm. that give the hitters an advantage. At what point do we have to speak up for ourselves and draw the line? If you're positioning it like that, I can at least listen to it and hear someone out
right.
who can say, smarten me up to all the things that you've been dealing with and trying to do your job.
Yeah, I definitely feel like the pitchers, I don't blame as far as getting into this, starting all of this, because all the advantages really were hitters. When they tightened the balls, which was a league thing, but then also so many teams, including World Series winning teams, were cheating and just knew what the signs were. They knew what the pitch was.
Mm-hmm.
And so pitchers say, all right, what can we possibly do to even the playing field a little bit? I'm sick of giving up three homers a game and having my ERA skyrocket during a contract year. So what can we do? And they're like, all right, here's what we could do. We could come up with all these crazy ways to get better grip on the ball, and now they got to just find another way to do it, which they will. The hitters right now, if it's not roids or stealing signs, they're cooking something up. I don't know what it is, but all these
guys—they've
been
doing it for decades of cooking something up,
yeah,
as you
right.
said,
they're
figuring it
they're
out.
They're working on something, and you're the Red Sox. You got to feel pretty good that Alex Cora is going to be one of those guys that figures out what the next thing is.
You would hope so, or that one of his pitchers do, because uh-huh. I'm with you. Like, you got to find a way to figure it out. Now, let's remember that the trade deadline is July 31st. So in about 6 weeks, we're hoping that the Red Sox end up doing something to bolster their team other than just waiting for Chris Sale to walk back in, right? So now we're going to have this adjustment going on with pitching, and you're going to have to try to figure out which dudes are legit and people that you would want to trade for. So Jim Bowden, former big league GM,
sure.
wrote in The Athletic about how the Red Sox should be buyers at the deadline. Nothing seismic.
Okay.
Here's what he wrote.
Makes sense.
The Red Sox have bounced back strongly this season, and Alex Cora's return as manager. Their starting rotation has been middle of the pack despite a down year from Eddie Rodriguez and Chris Sale recovering from Tommy John. Their bullpen, led by Matt Barnes, has been solid. Top of their lineup, dominating thanks to Martinez, Devers, Bogarts, Verdugo. However, the bottom half of the lineup has underwhelmed. Acquiring a left field or center field impact bat could be a game changer. The best solution would be, here you go, to land Starling Marte from the Marlins or Kettle Marte from the Diamondbacks.
Give me one of the Martes.
I was just going to say,
give
right?
Give me a Marte.
If you're going to give me a Marte,
I'd
rather have Starling Marte, I think, than the other Marte, but whatever.
I'll take a Marte.
Just bring in somebody who apparently can add a bat, and it's really interesting that Bowden, a former GM, is looking more at the bottom half of the lineup than trying to strengthen the rotation. Now, of course, Sale's coming back.
Yeah.
I still think they need at least one more bullpen arm. But Starling Marte, at one point in time, he was an enigma.
He was a one-time All-Star, Starling Marte, and I believe this is the final year of his deal. With,
so a rental?
With Miami.
That
so
would
you could
fit.
Potentially get him. I would be all in favor
of that. I think they could definitely use... I'm surprised first baseman wasn't on his list. You'd think they would maybe need a first baseman as well, but the idea of the bottom part of the lineup makes sense.
Oh, very much so.
And they could definitely do that. And then just this solidifies your outfield a little bit more, too.
Very much so. And by the way, the D-backs lost their 22nd consecutive road game last night. So if you're looking
at... historically bad.
It really is.
They're gaining on the record, I think.
I do believe so. Well, I think they tied,
they tied the
record last night, if what I'm reading here is correct.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And it's funny. They have the Diamondbacks in the seller category. And it's,
I would imagine.
And it's written, they're going to be sellers at the deadline, but seem reluctant to trade their best overall player, Ketel Marte, because he signed through 2024 on a club-friendly contract. Third baseman Eduardo Escobar is the player they're most likely to move at the deadline.
Yeah.
But to your point, a first baseman who could, yeah. Where is Mitch Moreland gone?
Who would have thought? Even somebody like that, right? You're not asking for, you know, Mo Vaughn. You're asking for somebody like Mitch Moreland, just kind of solidifies what
he does.
He's good defensively and can hit a little bit. Hit enough.
Sure it up a little bit is what they're really looking for. So what will be interesting is the pitching evaluation in the trade market now that we're going to go through this shift starting Monday. We mentioned Alex Cora a little bit earlier. Out of context, Alex. Bill Belichick was referenced in the Cora interview yesterday with OMF. That's next.
As the world reopens again, make sure to keep Gresh and Keefe a part of your routine. And if you missed a show, download the podcast at WEEI.com.
I'm not ruling it out, but I do believe Chris every day, you know, he's a force. Three outs, we know that. We can
pretty good then.
Yeah, he was really good. They talk about it the whole weekend, and man, they... No, it's funny because this guy, the whole season, everything he looks at is the power rankings.
Xander.
And trying to find, Xander.
Boy, that Alex Cora.
That's right.
Wonder what the conversation sounds like with the pitchers now. Hey, you got to have clean hands.
Yeah, let me see your hands before you go out there. Like, no, I'd rather not. I'm good, coach.
Maybe the umpires will start putting that stuff in those saddlebags so that the balls can get a little tacky. Mm-hmm. It is 11:51. The Gresham Keefe here with you. And, well, OMF, they talk to Alex Cora each and every week here on the home of the Red Sox, the WEEI Sports Radio Network, WEEI.com, and, of course, on the old Odyssey app. And, by the way, on the Odyssey app here in Boston proper, you can listen to Red Sox baseball on the app. Well, yesterday was the chat between the boys and Alex Cora, and, well, we like to take, manipulate, have some fun, and hopefully make you smile for the next 2.5 minutes in listening to some out-of-context Alex Cora, and we start with a Bill Belichick impression to start from Alex Cora. What's up? How are you?
I'm good. You guys.
You okay?
Are you trying to be Bill?
Oh, that's what he's doing. Can you just stop that right now? That might be the best out of context. That's the best start right there.
That's how you should start every interview, right? You sort of set the table for everybody.
I'm sure not the first time the Big O has been told that before in his illustrious career.
Oh, God, no.
All right, go ahead again, John. That's
What's
great.
Up? How are you?
I'm good. You guys.
You okay?
Are you trying to be Bill?
Oh, that's what he's doing.
Are you doing what's best for your team?
That is... Up. Alex Cora doing Bill Belichick impression.
I like that to me, man.
Oh, we play a good game. Yes, sir. We won that game. On to the second game.
There you go.
Boy, I tell you what.
We're on to Atlanta.
I tell you what. If you did adopt that, you would just save your vocal cords. I tell you what.
That's pretty good. Fourier getting involved in that one, too?
Oh, yeah.
He's getting, he's like, you know.
Alex gets it, man. He does. Yeah. He's very good with this. And then they got to do the Red Sox pitchers, and in quotes, I'll do some air quotes,
okay.
Get it.
Oh, boy.
With the substances.
Like I said, I'm part of it, so I told him, you know, I said, guy, get suspended. Or a year or 2 years. You don't want to be that guy, because they're going to keep talking about it, and then they're going to keep looking at every single pitch you make.
No, I'm just saying that's what I'm saying. No one's going to be talking about Garrett Richards. I'm sorry, but around here they won't be. I don't think locally or nationally. They're going to be talking about you.
Yeah, but I told them, I said, to be honest with you, I can deal with that.
It is an interesting perspective, though, that Cora comes from.
It is.
It really is. I mean, he was suspended for an entire year. And I think a lot of us look at it and be like, all right, he was popped for a year. So was AJ Hinch. And all right, they're both back and you kind of move on. But we didn't have to live it. Like, he talks about sort of the shame that it brought on him and his family and his friends. And it's just like, all right, here's a guy that couldn't be a part of baseball for an entire year. And so now with these different looming suspensions, and you hear him talk about it, yeah, it's not going to be a whole year like his was, but 10 games for some of these pitchers, and then they'll always have that. It'll always be on their resume.
Yeah, they will, but I think that for a lot of fans, you can, like, rationalize, okay, they've done a ton to help batters. It's sticky stuff on baseballs. You were banging trash cans. You know what I mean? Like, oh, a trash can lid.
But also 10 games, 162 games. It's different. Yeah. It's pretty significant.
I think the big thing would be the relievers versus starters.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder if that is something that maybe has pitchers a little upset. Like, we talked about kind of the tiers. Like, don't you think a reliever should get 5 games if found the first time and the starters get 10?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be fair? Because imagine if whatever it is,
lose a
right?
closer for 10 games.
That's like, a killer.
Yeah, yeah, that's bad.
Absolute killer. Yeah. So good job on the out of context Alex right there. That Belichick stuff. Very
fantastic.
Good. We were going to get into some Patriots. However, we are going to do something football related next. And our friend Chris Scheim, who for what this is day 2 of 4 days this week, has had a little bit of the sads. He's been down. Mm. But today, it's the bubbling anger that needs to come out of Scheim to make him feel better. So we're going to let old Scheimy free the beast on a football topic that we will get into with you next. What's up? How are you?
I'm good. You guys.
You okay?
So I told him, you know, I said, guy, get suspended. Or a year or 2 years.
Say, no one's going to be talking about Garrett Richards.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.